Hello, welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Constantine Brandopoulo with Fidelity's Trading Strategy Desk. And with me, as always, every week, Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist at Options Play. Tony, it's great to see you. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, KB. It's great to be here. It's been quite a roller coaster couple of weeks here for investors, so really looking forward to diving into that.
Yeah, no question about it, Tony. Certainly some two-sided action here, especially over the past week or so. Just to frame it for everyone in the audience, the S&P 500 hit a new all-time high on October 29th, that Wednesday, going into the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, the Fed meeting. And that level, that peak, was at 69.20. Well, here we are today, sitting at 67.40, just a little week after the Fed meeting last week, which brings us to a total drawdown of about 2.6% peak to trough. The 10-year Treasury bonds are having a big up day today, but the 10-year Treasury yield index, the TNX, is still up. Let's call it about 10 basis points in that same time frame, despite of the fact that the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 25 basis points this last go around. Tony, since the April lows into the May recovery, we've done plenty of shows, of course, almost every single Thursday here for In the Money. And I just wanted to point out that the S&P 500 has had plenty of pullbacks since that April low into May recovery, but none of them were bigger than about 3.5%. And they were all fairly short-lived. So here we sit right now at down about 2.6, maybe challenging the previous pullback low extremes. And I guess everyone in the audience is probably wondering, what is Tony thinking about what's driving the action? How are you framing the current situation and assessing it for what could potentially be coming into the year end? Are we thinking that we'll look in the rearview mirror and think, the market is just experiencing another one of those garden variety less than 3.5% pullbacks? Or is this something that is going to get into a more painful situation? What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, thank you so much for that framing, KV. Because, at first glance, it definitely feels like we could potentially be due for a bigger correction than the typical 2 to 3% we've seen over the last few months. But, it's really interesting to see how buyers continue to step back in every time we see these shallow pullbacks over the last few months, and nothing particularly leads me to believe that that's necessarily going to end just now. But let's dive into some of the what's driving market sentiment, because equity investors have been on quite a roller coaster here in the last couple of weeks. It started off with a cooler inflation print, expectation of rate cuts here, of 2 rate cuts this year, and then potentially a couple of more by the middle of next year. And also just, some trade deals that have recently seemingly gone quite well, specifically with China and the rest of the Asian countries. It really led to quite a bit of optimism that drove the S&P to those new all-time highs that you're referring to. But that was quickly kind of dashed by Chairman Powell last week, kind of pouring some cold water on this rally by taking a much more hawkish tone here, with regards to expectations for December and into next year. So that certainly put a dent into the market's optimism. And then you also had tech earnings last week, which largely from a earnings perspective was quite strong here, showing us that earnings continues to outpace revenue growth. However, the one thing that kind of investors are starting to be more and more sensitive to is really just the speed at which these major tech firms are looking to spend out or outspend each other, rather, to build out AI infrastructure to essentially dominate that AI compute. So, valuations are starting to become a little bit of a concern here, and I think the markets are playing a little bit of a balancing act right now between what is the driver of the rate cuts, which is a slowing economy, a cooling labor market, and it doesn't help the fact that we are losing some important data coming out of the government because of the shutdown, or rather delays in data because of the government shutdown. We're relying more and more on private data to kind of fill in the gaps here, you know. But we have to remember that the reason that the Fed is committing to these rate cuts and markets are expecting these rate cuts here between now and the middle of next year is because the labor market has cooled substantially in the last 6 months. And whether or not kind of the reduction in interest rates offsets the cooling of the economy is kind of the calculus that I think a lot of investors are trying to figure out here right now. And I think if you even look at today's price action, I think it's starting to show that investors are becoming a little bit more concerned about the cooling labor market and the slowdown in consumer spending in the lower half of consumers, because right now, you know, the top 10% of earners are driving close to 50% of consumer spending. So we're seeing that bifurcation in consumer spending that is, you know, a bit of a risk, and kind of also kind of has a parallels to what we're seeing here in the stock market, which is the fact that market breadth in the last 3 months have been incredibly poor. We have just a handful of growth names that are driving the markets higher, while the rest of the market is really lagging behind. You know, last week, a really, you know, statistic that I brought up here on this show was the fact that there were more stocks in the S&P 500 making 52-week lows than stocks making 52-week highs. That's not a good sign when the markets are reaching all-time highs, especially when you couple with the fact that the S&P 500 is now trading at north of, you know, 23 times forward earnings. So long term, we're talking about stretch valuations, market breadth that's incredibly poor, and, you know, that's not a good sign here. And those are some of the building blocks for what could be a quick, violent sell-off here. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we're going to get that tomorrow. Doesn't mean that we're going to get that next week. But we have started to see these things stretch more and more. The question is just whether or not, when does that rubber band break? And that's a really hard question to answer. But we do have some of the underlying internals that have the making of what could be a quick, fast, violent sell-off here in the markets. If you look at the S&P 500, that 6750 level that we're just below as of today is the major support level that buyers have stepped in on. If we break below that level, that could be a sign that we start to see some further selling pressure here in the S&P 500. You know, the one thing that I will have to say is that, you know, the Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday, and it does seem like the Supreme Court at the moment seems pretty skeptical about the legality of the tariffs that Trump has put into place. You know, that is a pretty significant driver, I think, of sentiment. You know, the betting markets are putting only about a 20% chance that Trump wins this particular case. That could be a, you know, a short-term catalyst that actually plays into the hands of the rest of the market that has been lagging behind to potentially play some catch up. So there are quite a few things that I do think that are more optimistic here for equity markets to be looking at that, you know, I think in this current market environment, even though we're seeing that slowdown in labor being more of a concern, the valuations being a concern here, buyers still seemingly continue to buy this dip. And I think there are reasons to be cautiously optimistic here in the markets going into the last couple of months of the year.
Yeah, Tony, you're thinking that support we have drawn here on the chart likely holds. That's around 6750. We might be just a touch underneath it right now, so keep a close eye on it. It obviously correlates to a flat 20-day simple moving average right now. Below us, the more intermediate term moving average, the 50-day, is sitting at around 6660 and rising. That area acted as a solid, strong area of support in the most recent October pullback that we saw on the back of some trade war escalation potential. And I just wanted to say that obviously, giving this framing, thinking about being cautiously optimistic, maybe looking for opportunities in the options market. This is an options trading show at the end of the day. Tony, what's the trade idea?
Yeah, I think in this type of market environment, I do think it does warrant to take some exposure off the table as we talk about some of the concerns around the broader markets. And one particular name that I think is worth paying attention to right now is Apple. There's been a lot of reasons over the last year that I've been much more bearish on Apple from a fundamental perspective, from a valuation perspective. But I do think that now, from a timing perspective, makes sense to actually enter a bearish position because, valuations and fundamentals are the worst tools from a timing perspective. They might give you a good sense for the picture of the business, but they're not very good from a timing perspective. But if you look at the chart here for Apple, recently the stock just made a new all-time high. But what we're starting to see is that momentum has overextended itself as it made a new all-time high with divergence with momentum. What that means is that we're making higher highs in price, but we're no longer making higher highs in momentum. And that means that buyers are starting to look more exhausted here in this type of market environment. And that gives me a sense that, these all new all-time highs could potentially fail and we trade back into the range. If you look at kind of the business here, the stock trades at a very rich valuation relative to the industry. It's trading at 30, nearly 34 times forward earnings. Now, typically with stocks trading at those types of valuations, you're expecting high growth and high profitability. But Apple really is falling pretty far behind from a growth story perspective. EPS growth is now under 9% year over year, and revenue growth is looking around 5% year over year. That's much slower than the average S&P 500 stock in terms of expected growth. The only thing that's holding up these valuations is the fact that profit margins have recently expanded a little bit from around 24% net margins to around 26%. So that is a net positive here for the business, but 26% net profit margins, which is a very healthy and industry-leading profit margin. But does that justify a valuation that's 50% higher than the rest of the industry? I think this is really where the valuations are starting to disconnect from the fundamentals, because if you look at kind of the business itself, Apple's really fumbled their rollout of AI. And to this very day, they don't have a solution with regards to how AI integrates into their ecosystem of devices. And that's across their laptops, phone, wearables. This is going to be a big issue for for the company, and they have continued to struggle with this. It's not like they, we're talking about nearly 3 years in where other competitors have leaped ahead of them in terms of this particular aspect of the business. And I think this is going to be a big issue for Apple, especially with the upgrade cycle, as the differentiation between iPhones are getting smaller and smaller. And then you look at kind of the big bet that Apple has on the future. They spent over $100 billion and 10 years building their augmented reality, which is meant to be the next iteration, if you will, of a smartphone. But this is really where, if you look at the Vision Pro, and look at kind of what Meta and Snapchat are doing with regards to AR, it very much feels like Meta is potentially leapfrogging Apple in this particular case from a commercial viability perspective. And I think this is a bit of a black swan for Apple with regards to, can Meta potentially be the leader of wearables going forward as opposed to Apple? I think there's a small chance of that, but the probability of that, I actually think is bigger than most investors are currently thinking. So for those reasons, I think that the outlook for Apple here is looking quite poor and doesn't really justify the 34 times forward earnings, where the stock is essentially priced to perfection. The rollout of the Apple iPhone Air hasn't been particularly successful. So, relying on iPhones for all growth here for Apple, I think is going to become a bigger and bigger issue for investors going forward. So the fact that we have an alignment between the charts and the fundamentals leads me to believe that now is the opportunity to potentially add some bearish exposure here to Apple, especially as the markets start to look a little bit shakier and have a higher probability of a pullback. So I'm going out to the December expiration. I'm looking at buying the 270, 250 put vertical here on Apple. Earlier today, you can spend about $6.25 for that debit spread. That means I'm buying the 270 puts and then selling the 250 puts against that. Total risk that I'm taking on this is $625 per contract if Apple is above $270 by that December expiration. But if the stock is below 250 by that December expiration, I'm looking at a potential gain of 1375 per contract. So I'm looking at a greater than 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio on this particular trade. And I think that is the way to play for what could be some type of pullback we get in the overall markets over the next few, call it 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, Tony, as an option strategist here at Fidelity, I pay attention, very close attention to implied volatilities, the cost of options. And you're pointing out that premiums are actually relatively low. And I would agree with you. I mean, you look out at implied volatilities for at the money options 30 to 60 days out are trading at sub 24% annualized, which is certainly is the cheapest on a relative basis versus the remainder of the Magnificent Seven, the other six companies that are considered to be the components of that index, right? Especially now, the premiums have come in even more post the earnings event uncertainty getting deflated out of them. So to your point, I mean, this is a bear put spread structure. You're buying premium. Options are not particularly expensive. You're selling a downside put against the one that you're buying. So you're defining your risk reward. It's a bear put spread, bearish leaning type structure. It is defined, from the perspective of risk reward. But I'm curious, Tony, you know, how would you think about managing this trade if Apple continues to defy the fundamental valuation logic? Or, you know, on a day like today, for example, continues to kind of act relatively defensively while the broader market is down in a big way and the remainder of its Magnificent Seven peers are lower on the day. Apple actually is higher and higher decently. What are you thinking of how to protect yourself in case it continues to make higher highs?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic question because with all options trades, you know, the most important thing I would argue is to make sure that you have a plan for what to do once you're in the trade. And I think from my perspective, there's two things here, right? I'm obviously trading against the trend of the stock. So I'm being a contrarian. And that's one thing to remember when you're being contrarian as to when you want to evaluate whether or not your timing on being contrarian is potentially right or wrong. And then on top of that, there are just basic risk management best practices that you should be applying to a trade like this. So the first thing you want to do is simply whenever I use a debit type structure, whether that's a long call or a put or a debit spread like this, is that if I lose more than 50% of the premium that I'm paying for the option, that is a good signal to potentially exit the trade at a loss and move on from that. Because if you lose 50% of the premium that you pay on a debit structure, chances are the stock is not moving in the direction you expect it to, certainly not in the time frame that you're expecting it to. So that's a good rule of thumb for saving potentially 50% of the total risk of the trade and essentially applying it to the next trade if it doesn't work out. And then the second part, which is the fact that I am being contrarian, the stock, like I said, made a new all-time high. It's showing some signs of exhaustion here from the buyers. But if the stock continues to make new all-time highs over the next couple of weeks, even if it doesn't trigger my stop loss level by the time that happens, that's also another reason to consider getting out. Because like I said, valuations and fundamentals are the worst timing tools. You know, if the charts are telling you something different from a timing perspective, you have to have the ability to accept the fact that your timing is just not right. Even if you believe in the compelling fundamental story, you have to be able to acknowledge when the timing is just wrong and get out. And that could potentially save you even more. So meaning you get out before you lose 50% of the premium, maybe you only lose 30% of the premium. Now you have 70% of what you had left on this particular trade to apply for the next opportunity.
Yeah, having a great plan. There's always needs to be, a thought of where do I cut bait, how do I move on and reevaluate. Tony, we are still in the earnings season here, even though we're getting closer to the end than the beginning, I guess. But any particular S&P 500 component that you're paying attention to that is yet to go?
We have quite a few stocks that are reporting. The one that I kind of have my eye on for this week, and I believe it reports after the close today, is Airbnb. They're trading at around 25 times forward earnings, which is definitely on the expensive side for hotel and lodging, even though I don't necessarily know that you could cl classify that necessarily in the classic sense of that particular sector. But it has industry-leading both free cash flow generation as well as net profit margins, well head and shoulders above kind of your traditional hotels and leisure type business. So for those reasons, I think that the 25 times forward earnings is more than justified. So when you have a compelling valuation and the stock is starting to show some relative strength relative to the to both the industry and the market, those are two signs that I look for to take a bullish stance going into earnings. So I like Airbnb that's reporting this afternoon for earnings.
Very good, Tony. We'll keep an eye on that one after the close and how it trades on Friday, tomorrow, post event. I guess we do have a look back on a trade that didn't go our way. What do we do, Tony?
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago, I laid out a bullish thesis here on Meta when it was trading around 722 heading into earnings. And despite reporting better than expected earnings and revenue, the stock took a pretty significant hit on the back of their recommitment to essentially spend more on AI infrastructure than they originally communicated for 2025. And that sent investors sort of to the sidelines, and we saw the stock decline a pretty significant amount. The stock's currently trading about $100 lower from when we entered the trade at 622. And when this is the reason I want to bring this up is because, we sold the credit spread for around $20.65. The rule of thumb that we generally have with credit spreads is that if you lose 100% of the maximum gain potential, it's time to cut your losses and move on. However, when the stock moves as a result of a catalyst event like we did here on earnings, what essentially happens is that the stock will gap above or below in the whether it's above or below depending on whether you're sold or bought. In this particular case, the stock is essentially gapped above the stop loss level on this particular trade, and we're essentially near max loss already on this trade with about 8 days left to go. So in this particular instance, this is one of the few, call it exceptions to the rule, where in this particular case, because there's still a little over a week left to go, even though we have exceeded the traditional stop loss level, the maximum loss that you can have from here, meaning how much more can you lose from here and expiration, is only $270. That's a pretty small fraction of the total risk that we were taking on this particular trade. And there wasn't no opportunity to get out at the stop loss level because the stock essentially gapped lower on earnings. This is one of the few exceptions, in my opinion, where it makes sense to just hold on to the strategy through expiration, because the stock could make a little bit of a bounce here in the next few weeks. I'm sorry, in the next week or so, to offset the $270 additional risk that you'd have to take by holding this to expiration. And I think that risk reward starts to skew more in your favor rather than cutting the losses and saving the $270. You have the potential, for the stock to make a bit of a bounce here, for Gamma to kind of accelerate that to the upside, and to maybe You're certainly, I don't think you're going to get back to break even anytime soon on this particular trade, but maybe instead of losing the roughly $3,165, maybe you could lose closer to $2,000 if the stock does make a bit of a pop here in the next week.
Tony, obviously this one would necessitate continuation of handholding here into next week. I mean, as you mentioned, you can't lose much more between now and expiration. And if the stock does move higher, let's say, based on your expectations, in the next week or so, that short strike is something that you would probably need to pay attention to, because if it's in between the short and the long put, you are going to potentially be assigned, right? Come expiration. So if you don't want to buy the shares, you would have to close the trade still before before expiration day. So something that you need to, if you're keeping it on and not closing it today, and you think that Meta has the potential of bouncing, keep a close eye on it, unless you want to become an owner, right, of 100 shares of stock potentially. So just something to keep in mind. Tony, this brings us to a close. I want to thank all the viewers for showing up. Reminder that you can tune in to all the In the Money episodes, of course, by registering to the upcoming ones on the Fidelity In the Money viewing page. You could see the registration a link on your screen right now. Always want to remind folks that we do the In the Money follow-up show on the Trading Strategy Desk here every Friday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. You could sign up for that by going to fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. I personally will be in the one tomorrow, so excited for it. I will see you all back here again for another show next week on Thursday. Tony, thank you so much for bringing us fresh and creative ideas each and every week. Take care, everybody.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of options play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only, and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.